Once again, you're listening to Jazz 91.9 WCLK, and I've had a chance to talk to you about Mr. Vijay Iyer and some of his great music, and he today has brought so much to the table, it's hard to really cover it all. This gentleman, in a short period of time, as I've once said, has brought the world to his knees by addressing also social issues. And without any further ado, I'd like to bring him to the table. How you doing, Vijay?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you doing?
It's a pleasure to have you grace the audience of WCLK in Atlanta and Jazz Tones. And I just want to commend you for some of the great work that you have done and what you have brought to the table in addressing social issues. I cannot start without talking about that Veterans Dreams Project and holding it down. And I'd like to discuss what inspired you to do this project.
That's a collaboration I did with the poet Mike Ladd. He and I have been working together since the early 2000s. And we've done a sort of series of big projects that are usually contemplating. I mean, it started where our first project was about people of color in airports and experiences, particularly right after 9/11, the kinds of experiences of surveillance and fear. And that's the project called In What Language that came out in 2003 or 2004. And then we did some more work in the middle, a project called Still Life with Commentator, which was kind of thinking about the 24-hour news cycle in a time of war. And finally, when it came time to think about what we might do next, I kind of realized that we'd been talking about war the entire time without really dealing with people who actually are out there experiencing it or involved in it. So that's how we decided to, in this case, not just make it about veterans, but make it involve veterans, and so really find ways to build collaboration and build a sort of collective conversation with the veterans community. So the project is basically about that encounter between veterans and civilians, and it involves veterans actually writing and performing in the project. So.
I listened to the project. It's very raw and to the point.
Oh, well, good.
No,
yeah,
I wasn't
it
just
across, you know.
No, it yeah. came across. It's very raw, but it's to me, it addresses a lot of issues and what people go through in war. Unless you've right. been there, you don't know. I often tell people there's no rules, end of quote.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
despite what they say, there's no rules. But you yeah. cover within your music the spiritual aspects of life as well as the social issues. There's one particular album that caught my attention. Is it Historicity? Yes. And I think you've been nominated 3 times. And you've also been nominated for Grammy Awards. Downbeat has nominated you 3 times as Musician of the Year and as a composer and a pianist. Give us some history, the audience some history about what drives you to bring these social issues and these spiritual issues to the forefront.
I suppose it's mainly that I've been nurtured by elders, and particularly elders from African-American communities around the U.S., on the West Coast and on the East Coast, who've, showed me what's possible when you kind of bring all of that together and not leave it behind when you get on stage, but, really try to channel it through the work you do as a creative artist. So I had the great privilege of working with poet and activist Amiri Baraka.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I also worked with Steve Coleman for many years, and with members of the AACM, which is a collective of experimental African-American musicians from Chicago.
Right.
And, you know, it was, for myself as a person of color who's not from the African-American experience, but has, my own different experience as a person of color in the U.S. as the child of immigrants from India, and, trying to find what my relationship to all of this might be, and how music might help me express that and might help us all get somewhere, you know? It's just about looking at, when you look at the history, when you really study it, you see that, I mean, often when people talk about the history of jazz, for example, they just talk about individuals, these sort of heroic individual trajectories, you know, like the great John Coltrane, the great Miles Davis, and all of them are absolutely great and are hugely influential for all of us, and especially for me, but it's best to understand them as part of a community and as part of a larger collective effort, you know, and it was very much about collaboration and about collective self-determination.
Obviously, a lot of people don't realize that not only have you been mentored by some of the greats. I interviewed Amiri Baraka 1 year before he passed here in Atlanta. And you, as a collaborative being, you've done some creative music pioneering with a host of artists, but also you've had a career that has spanned through the sciences, the humanities, the arts, and you have an interdisciplinary PhD in the cognitive science of music from the University of California. And you've written and published in the Journal of Consciousness Studies, The Wire, and Music Perception. You take an entirely different approach, creative as well as intellectual. And you're at Harvard.
Yeah, somehow let me teach there.
They let you in, huh?
Yeah, they let me in.
Did they understand your radical approach?
Well, you never know what they know, if they know what they're getting into. But, I remember initially when I was working there, I thought, like, wow, maybe they really have the wrong guy. They made a mistake.
Did they know
you?
Robin
Kelly, you know Robin Kelly?
Yes.
Black Marxist historian and scholar, wrote the great biography of Thelonious Monk. I was talking to him about this. He said, you know, if you think they hired you by mistake, well, that's the best news I've heard all day. Because, you know, he said the people who really make the most difference are the ones who get in, who basically come in unexpected, you know, and bring difference where it's necessary, and bring a sort of different focus, a different approach that can counterbalance what's already there.
Well, you bring a lot more than counterbalance, considering your mentors. Your mentors have instilled in you a great spirit that illuminates not only through the musical inspiration, but through the written word. And in this day of technology, you have laid some groundwork through your music that's entirely different. So I would like to know, if you want to present this to the public, what are your plans as a creative artist at Harvard?
Well, for one thing, just being an artist at a place like that creates a very different presence there, you know. And I'm not there as a career scholar, and I'm not there to define anything. You know, I'm there to ask questions and seek transformation, and try to cultivate a sense of community and use the arts to help do all of those things. And so, the main thing I feel that I can do with students is be there for them to figure out how to do that for themselves, you know, and try to help them through that process. So it's never really about me when I'm there. It's really about You know, the thing is, when you're training artists, you're creating the change agents of the future. So kind of about thinking long term about how that might work. So what can I arm them with now in terms of information, resources, and awareness, you know, particularly compassion, empathy, those kinds of things that are not really usually part of the menu.
Not a part of the capitalistic society.
You know, when you go to a competitive institution like that, people tend to be pretty individual focused. But the thing is, like I've been saying, is that music isn't about that.
No, it isn't. It crosses all lines. Your recent release with Mr. Leo Smith. Talk to us about it.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, he's one of the great pioneers of contemporary music. He's an innovative trumpet player and composer and a legend, you know, the legendary figure. He's 30 years older than I am, and so I've learned a lot from him. He's been kind of basically a mentor to me in the sense that he took me on the road starting in the mid-2000s, 2005 or so. I was in his band for several years. And so that's where I got a kind of apprenticeship with his system and his approach. And it was through that that I started to listen differently. You know, he actually helped me listen on a very different, very different terms, really in terms of awareness of others. He's a very spiritual force. I mean, he's like a sage. So working with him, you have there's this profound compassion in every sound he makes and the way he interacts with the people around him, with the audience, with fellow musicians. It's very empathetic. So we just, you know, over the course of working together in his band, a certain relationship emerged for us just playing one-on-one. And so when an opportunity came to make a duo album, we jumped at it. So we finally got to do that. It came out last year, and we've been touring quite a bit since then. And every single time we play, it's a new revelation for me.
The name of the new release?
It's called A Cosmic Rhythm with Each Stroke.
Interesting that it connects both of you together. I had a chance to listen to some of it, and you take people there. You make them rethink. Your music has that effect as compared to, I would say, the commercialism of the music industry. You take an entirely different approach. What can we expect in the future? Continue.
Well, I'm coming to Atlanta on Friday.
Right.
You may know that. So in the very near future, I'll be in your neighborhood.
You're going to be in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
I know that.
I'm with my trio Friday evening.
Yeah, you've got a great trio, man. I mean, I really look forward to this. In fact, I look forward to meeting you face to face. What can the audience of Atlanta expect at the Robert First Center?
It's this is a group we've been playing together for like 15 more years. So there's an element of it that's we just follow the path that reveals itself, but there's also a lot of depth just from the history that we have together and all the repertoire that we've been dealing with. And it's very rhythm-focused. It's very dynamic and some virtuoso musicians. The drummer is Tyshawn Sorey, who's one of the greatest musicians alive. I'm not exaggerating. And the bassist is Stefan Crump. And together we've just had a great time. We just played here last night. And I'm actually out in San Francisco right now, just wrapping up a string of concerts, and the three of us played here last night for a wonderful audience.
Oh,
700
yeah.
people. It was really nice. Felt really good.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Of course, I will come and introduce myself, but what you have to offer the community within Atlanta, especially in these times, you will give us a heart-wrenching uplift through your music and the compassion that you do with your composing. I've had a chance to listen to you, and you use in your releases, you use different instruments. That's what I like. You know, it's you don't take the same approach every time. You know.
Well, I find that you know, it's partly that when you open yourself up to really building with others, which means you kind of get involved in the knowledge and the consciousness and the soul of another person or other people, you know, and then through that process, a new music is born, you know. So I guess all these different projects I've been doing, they just genuinely emerge from that process of just being together in time.
Well, those of you just tuning in, we're speaking to VJI, who will be appearing at the Robert First Center this Friday at 8 o'clock, and I will be doing a pre-concert discussion on his career, which we're doing right now.
So, this is the pre-concert.
This is the pre-concert, so we'll have some fun, you know. But the thing that I really like about you, though, is all the elements that you bring to the stage and that you really, you say collaborative with the people that you work with, but it seems like through your life you had a mentor-disciple relationship that really carried you to the next level. Would you agree with that?
Well, I guess there have been several like that. You know, probably one of the early ones was Steve Coleman. I was in his band for about several years in the 90s. And he's actually the reason that I am a musician today.
mean, Steve,
back then I didn't know that there would be a path for me in this music, you know, and I was trying to become someone else, you know. So, so he made a space for me and like basically allowed me. What happens in these kinds of situations when you're apprenticing with elder musician is that they kind of tolerate you while you find and figure things out. I made a lot of mistakes on the bandstand with him, but they were all productive in the end, and, you know, in the sense of me discovering what I should have been doing or could have been doing. You know, finding it, you find a way to recover.
Trial and error?
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it's that plus the fact that it really matters. Because, like, in performance, there's no turning back, you know. You can't say, well, let's start over and try it a different way this time. You have to say, okay, from here, we're going to make it count, you know, even though what we're in, what feels like a musical crisis right now. So that's a whole different situation. It's not just idle experimenting. You know, it's actually like, well, we have to make this matter to the 1,000 people who are sitting here.
You know? You have to make it matter now.
Yeah.
We really look forward to seeing you Friday, and I know that you will make it matter immediately, if not sooner, when you perform. But I look forward to it, though, because I really feel that artists like you who are able to educate on many levels makes a difference to the audience, because you're not regurgitating the same thing over and over again. In fact, when you play your music, you come on stage and you don't play it the same way you recorded it. So that makes a difference. So you see, I've been listening to you.
Well, we try to make it come alive each time, and you know, part of, I mean, actually Wadada was just saying this the other day, that it's performance is almost like a ritual of forgetting, you know, because for us, like, we kind of have to make it new. Even if it's a song we've played 400 times, we have to make it new for ourselves so that experience carries over to the listeners. And it's crucial to kind of like prepare by sort of emptying your mind so that you can really rediscover everything each time.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it from Vijay Iyer. He will be here Friday at the Robert First Center. We look forward to the performance. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have an opportunity after the concert to sign autographs. And I look forward to meeting you, okay? Spreading that consciousness and compassion, because surely we all need it at this particular time.
Yeah. Now more than ever.
Uplifting the consciousness.
Friday more than now.
On Friday more than now.
I guarantee you, it's just going to be more and more crucial.
Between now and Friday, there's no telling.
There's no telling, for sure.
Expect the unexpected. You know, my mantra is always, life is stranger than fiction. And it's very true, you know. But thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Vijay Iyer, ladies and gentlemen.
So long, everybody. We
appreciate you, definitely, and gracing the audience of WCLK.
My pleasure.